Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Good morning. Welcome to the Morning Beat this Thursday, July 9th. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Michaela Gordon, it's a morning. It's Thursday. I'm here for it. How are you doing today?
Honey, you know, we love a Thursday. It's close to Friday for the weekend, but I'm more pleased because you haven't been feeling good.
Yeah.
You've taken all the precautions.
Uh-huh.
We've been like, okay, we'll just do it from home until you get better. How are you feeling? Tell the masses.
I feel fantastic.
Yes.
So my COVID-19 test came back negative. I've had four negatives. So that's great. I've been tested a lot lately. I traveled a little bit. And out of an abundance of caution, I really wanted to make sure that I was okay for the sake of my family and for you guys. So we haven't been in studio. I think we're heading back to studio tomorrow. I feel fantastic.
I'm so ready.
Listen.
You know, I thought I would like working from home. I did. Like, I was like, I think this is kind of cool. And then, no, turns out, hate it. Want to go back to the studio.
I don't enjoy it. It's not the same energy. It's not quite the same. I will tell you, though, I'm eating a piece of toast right now, and it tastes amazing. And I might have a second. I might do that. I don't know.
Well, this is the first time you've been able to keep anything down, right?
It's fluids. A lot of fluids. I've been drinking a lot of Pedialyte lately, but I feel fantastic today. You know how after you've been sick for a few days, that first day you feel good again, you feel like you could run up a mountain?
Oh, that's you're helping on your Peloton for sure.
Well, calm down. Maybe another day or two before that happens. But yeah, I feel fantastic. It's Thursday. It's going to be a great show. We've got Carmen Carrera on the show today, which is so exciting. I'd never spoken with her, and she is quite the interesting, formidable, just powerful female. She's so fantastic, and I'm so excited to talk to her. We also asked her about this Halle Berry situation we've talked about a couple times this week. She has a really interesting take on that, so you're going to want to stick around for that. Also, there's some legislation in San Francisco, our neighbors up north, called the Karen Act.
You know, I gotta love it.
Spelled with a C. We think you probably know what that's about, but we're going to discuss that in 20 minutes from right now. So make sure you stick around. We're also hoping for a Supreme Court ruling this morning as well. And when we get that, we'll be sure to break that news and try to get our political expert, Samuel Garrett Pate, on the line to break that all down for us. But before we get ahead of ourselves, Michaela Gordon, why don't you do what you do? How about some news on the beat?
You got it, babe. So at least 24 states have hit pause on reopening plans as U.S. coronavirus cases rocket past 3 million. To add to the tension, distrust between President Trump and his top health officials has boiled to the surface. Now, the president has not attended a meeting of his coronavirus task force in months, and the group has started holding sessions outside the White House. Things are similarly grim elsewhere. The UK just unveiled another $37.6 billion coronavirus stimulus package as leaders try to lift Britain out of its worst economic slump in centuries. In Hong Kong, authorities are warning of potential exponential growth in new COVID-19 cases after a surge in local transmissions. It's a big blow to a city initially hailed for its quick and effective pandemic response. So that's so tough. I feel like,
really,
though, to be fair, nobody really planned for a pandemic like this. Like,
We did. Barack Obama did. And then the entire task force was dismantled. And all of these nations, this is why it's so frustrating. And I understand that humans are impatient, but all of these nations, especially ours, we put these guidelines into place that were very, very specific. And then nobody hit them. And then we reopened. Our leaders are not leading us.
But I'm saying, even above the administration, Obama or whomever, I feel like if this is taking us into November, what started in, at least back in December, that's just a lot. Like, that's a big, big task to take over. Even, you know, if they had it planned, I mean, financially, it's been so tough for so many people. We're over 46 million unemployed. It's just awful.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, in better news, if you're celebrating a birthday, happy, happy birthday. You're in good company. You're celebrating with Fred Savage, a.k.a. Kevin Arnold from the Wonder Years. He turns 44. Oh, I used to love Winnie.
That makes me feel old.
Does it?
He's 44? Yeah.
Well, you're turning a 40.
Keep going. Continue.
Okay. Shark Tank star Mr. Wonderful Kevin O'Leary is 66 years old. And singer Courtney Love turns 56. Now that makes me feel old. 56,
I'm also, Courtney Love? I'm also, kudos to her. I didn't think she'd still be alive at 56 years ago. Like, she, when she was going through it, she's pulled it together. She had a rough spot back in the day, though, honey.
She really did. Okay, give us a vibe of the day.
One day you'll have everything you've ever wanted. Don't stop believing in yourself. Aw.
I love that. That's perfect.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. Well, coming up, we're talking about San Francisco supervisor introducing the Karen Act to outlaw racially motivated 911 calls. We have these details coming up next.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat. Now, we want to just go ahead and preface this next segment by saying, if your name is Karen and you're triggered by that name, by your own name, we apologize. We did not come up with this. However, we are doing a story on Karen's being sort of reprimanded finally for calling in on, you know, minorities basically across the country for non-crimes. Okay, so we've seen these stories pop up all over the country the last few months. Women have been called Karen with a K for calling in on oftentimes black men for no reasons and acting hysterically scared for their lives. Obviously, there's the woman in Central Park who called in on the bird watcher. There's also a Karen who called a man up in San Francisco in the Bay Area for writing Black Lives Matter on his own property, claiming, she and her husband claimed they knew the man who lived there. Turns out he was the man who lived there. So up in the Bay Area in Northern California, San Francisco area, they're actually doing something about this. They've put forth a new a bill basically called Karen, C-A-R-E-N, spelled with a C though, standing for Caution Against Racially Exploitative Non-Emergencies. So this is a way for them to actually take legal action on people who do call. It's an ordinance in San Francisco who do call in citing fear or danger when really it's just flat out racism. I think this is fantastic because all these women in particular who call in know that they're protected. If the cops show up, they know what that actually means. Mm-hmm. If you're a white woman calling the cops on a black man, you know the force that could be used. You know that man's life could be put in danger. And yet, if you still call anyways for no reason other than your own ignorance and stupidity, you should be held accountable for that.
Well, here's what I actually read. I thought this was so funny. The reason that they started saying Karen was because they were mad that they were, in quotes, Karen too much about things that weren't their business. So that's apparently how Karen came about. However, I have an aunt and she's Latin and she's like, how did I get mixed up in this? Like, I just want to be my own name, Karen. And I'm like, well, real talk, this is who you are now.
Real talk. It was either Karen or Susan. If we're being honest, we all know that. And I have a good friend whose name is Susan and she actually lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. And there are a lot of memes and things that go around social media, like, come on, Susan. And it's just, they're just funny names, but they're obviously very, very white names historically.
Yeah.
So Karen, thank God it was Karen. I'm not really close to any Karens.
Well, listen, when I was younger, and I remember this vividly, I would want to call 911 just to call them, like any curious moron of a kid, me. And so my mom would go, if you call them, you will go to jail. If they come and they see there's not any kind of emergency, they're going to take you to kid jail. And I was like, oh no, I can't call them. I mean, I was taught at such a young age, you can't just call 911. There are absolutely consequences. So I feel like this totally makes sense. You can be, even as a grown adult, you can just call 911 on everything.
I remember when 911 was invented, when it first came out, and being told, do not dial it. Do not under any circumstance dial that unless something bad is happening. You can't just dial. And I don't know how many times I wanted to hit 911 so bad just to see what would happen. but never did.
As dramatic as I was, I wanted to call 911 on my mom for like grounding me. I mean, it was like very, you know what you do, but I saw this other video. This woman called 911 and I feel like we have to like sort of make this clear. She was at the dentist and they were asking her to put her mask on. And she was like, you're not working on my nose. You're working on my teeth. I want to speak to the owner. Like I spoke to my attorney, you know, just going off, like just so entitled. And if I were to receive a 911 call about a woman who's refusing to wear her mask and so they're not serving her, she said it's not the
dentist.
At the dentist, like all you have to do is wear it back there. And that, you know, so it's like those moments are just so ridiculous to me. I would be livid if I had to show up to a call like that.
Also, because there are so many people, you know, black people in particular in this country who won't call 911 in the worst of scenarios.
Because
they're so afraid of getting the cops involved that that means somebody's life is going to be taken.
Listen, we watched a video where they did call 911 and the cops ended up arresting the black people who called.
Happens
and
all
they
the
were
time.
Like in front of their own business. Yeah.
Well, kudos to San Francisco and the San Francisco supervisor, Shimon Walton. That is the person who put forth this ordinance in San Francisco, you know, during the board, they had a board of supervisors meeting this Tuesday. They had this discussion. So, I mean, there's no way around this. This has to be addressed. It's an issue that's being brought up more and more often. It's been going on forever, just like so much of these things we're seeing now, but it's being caught on camera for the first time because we're all walking around with mobile devices with 4K cameras in our pockets now. So hopefully there will be, you know, an implementation of consequences for weaponizing emergency resources, you know, with racist intentions. You should not be able to call 911 because you're racially ignorant. Not okay. Yeah,
I absolutely agree. Remember when you were 5 years old and your mom said you would go to kid jail if you called? We have to implement that rule. Kid jail is a thing. All right. Well, coming up, we're talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. A lot of big businesses have been bailed out, but what about small businesses? We'll have that conversation coming up next.
You're listening to The Morning Beat, and if you know one thing about us, we take mental health very seriously here at Channel Q and The Morning Beat, so we set aside a little bit of time every morning in our first hour for a segment we call Checking In. I'm going to take this one away, Michaela, because I just want to let you know something.
Go ahead, babe.
I'm feeling like $1 million.
Come on. We want to hear this.
You know, I've been sick for a few days, and you know when you get sick, and all of a sudden, you're stuck with your thoughts. You're laying in bed. You're not feeling great. Maybe watching Netflix, going in and out of napping, which is basically all I've been doing for the last few days. And then that first day you feel better again, you remember how easy it is to take your health for granted. And
absolutely.
The second you feel better, I feel like I could do anything today. I feel like I could take on the world. I'm probably going to go back to bed after this. But still, right now, in this moment.
But you could if you wanted to.
But if I wanted to, I choose not to today.
It's a choice.
But I'm feeling so much better. I'm just so relieved because I was nervous for a couple of days.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel the same way. I think that whenever I've been sick, the second I feel better, I get so excited. I just want to go outside. I just want to like live my normal life again. And you do. You really take for granted your health. And I think that you getting sick like this also has to be a reminder of why people need to be staying inside and wearing their masks.
I mean,
with COVID-19, some symptoms you don't feel, like Keisha Lance Bottoms, the mayor of Atlanta, who tested positive. And there are others who feel it tremendously. I mean, the aches and pains that
I thought for sure for a couple of days I had it. I really did. And
you
I got tested again. Yeah. I ran into an old friend last week at Target and just randomly hugged him. I was wearing a mask. He was wearing a mask. And then all of a sudden I was like, ugh. And my boyfriend's like, why did you hug him? I was like, well, I haven't seen him in years. It was just a reaction. And it was just a weird, I don't know why I made the choice. It's just a natural instinct to hug people. I love hugging people.
Of course.
And all of a sudden he starts coughing a lot and he was like sweating at one point. And I was like, why'd I hug him? Like what? So in my mind, and also with COVID-19, anytime there's anything wrong with you, I feel like every time I feel, I start Googling all the potential side effects or the potential like warning.
We said it jokingly. And another station that we listened to, a sister station of ours, it was really a funny, hilarious segment that they did called What Is This Cough? And it's like, listening to coughs and they're like, is that allergies? Is that COVID? Or is it a bong hit? Like, you have to be able to differentiate.
Well, no. True story. My friend told me, he's like, I just smoked a bunch of weed at my barber right before I got here. So it was a weed cough.
Okay, so we have to know these things. It's important.
Yeah.
Because anytime, and you know, we all have very dry humor, but the minute somebody goes, COVID, are you sick? Are you good?
Of course.
You good? Meanwhile, I just have terrible allergies.
If I sneeze, I get nervous. I don't want people to think about me sneezing. I was on a plane a week or so ago, and I went home to my hometown for their first Pride event. And I think maybe the entire time I might've heard one person cough on a plane. Because girl, you know, people are holding in those coughs as much as they can right now.
Anybody.
Nobody. Listen. I'd be afraid I'd get kicked off the plane.
Well, you're safe and you're healthy now. And that's all I care about because I need you. You're my ride or die, my work hubby. I adore you. However,
yay.
I'm going through something. Maybe we can talk about it tomorrow. I have bug bites all over my body.
Wait, so does Emil.
Stop.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing this. We're talking about it.
There's something going on with mosquitoes right now in Southern California. Listen, I don't know what it is.
Ma'am, and citronella ain't cutting it, honey. So we're going to need to find some solution. They're huge. They're like welts. So I'm glad you're healthy. But yes. I'm dying over here. Well, good. Well, maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow because I'm itching out of my skin. Thank you, Summer. Now, coming up in our next hour, we're joined with our political expert, Samuel Garrett Pate, on the final SCOTUS decision. It's a big one, and we'll have the details coming up.
You're listening to The Morning Beat. Now, coming up in our second hour, we've got an update on, actually, this is really interesting. We're seeing a bit of a setback in the battle to fight AIDS, the HIV crisis. We're seeing numbers spike again, and they think it could have something to do with COVID. We're going to have that discussion in 20 minutes from right now. Also, we're expecting a Supreme Court decision any moment now. And as soon as we do have that, this regards Trump's tax records. This is a big one. This is the last ruling to come down.
What do you think it's going to be? You think we're going to get it or no? Just make a quick bet.
Oh.
Will we or won't we?
My gut tells me no. My heart tells me yes. My heart tells me that John Roberts is going to save the Republic right now, and he's going to give us these records. That's what my heart wants. My gut tells me no.
I feel literally the same way. I don't think we're getting them.
My gut tells me 5-4 no.
Right down party lines. Okay. For fun, to take the other side, we will get them.
Yep.
God, I can't even believe that. I can't even lie. We're not getting it.
Well, we've got Samuel Garrett Pate, our political expert, on the show in about 40 minutes to discuss. Hopefully they come in by then. If not, we're going to rework the show, push it back a little bit, and wait for the results to come in. This is the last ruling of their current session. So stick around for that. But first, Michaela Gordon, how about you give us some news on the beats?
Of course, and always. Well, there's a lot going on in the news. The Supreme Court is working its way through a slew of important cases. Now, the court ruled 7-2 that the Trump administration can let employers deny contraception coverage on religious grounds, clearing the way for a weakening of the Affordable Care Act's contraceptive coverage mandate. By the government's own estimate, between 75,000 to 125,000 women could lose coverage. The court also threw out two job bias lawsuits brought by teachers against their employers, reaffirming that religious institutions and schools have a First Amendment right to select their employees. These two rulings are a win for conservatives who argue for what they see as religious freedom. Now, we just talked about it. Today is the final day of the Supreme Court's term, where it's expected to issue opinions in two cases concerning access to President Trump. So we will be joined with Samuel Garrett Pate, and the ruling should be done for a while coming from SCOTUS. Now, in other news, President Trump really, really wants schools to open in the fall, and he even tweeted a threat to cut off education funding if schools don't comply. Here's just one thing. He can't unilaterally cut federal education support, and even if he could, the federal government provides less than 10% of funding for public elementary and secondary schools. Now, House Democrats quickly dismissed his threat. The president also took issue with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines for safely reopening schools, calling them very tough and expensive. Now, the agency says it will issue new guidelines next week. Meanwhile, Harvard and MIT are suing the Trump administration after it announced it would not allow foreign students to take online courses in the U.S. this fall semester.
I actually have an update to that story, Michaela. This came, this breaking news 7 minutes ago. The CDC will not revise guidelines for schools reopening despite Trump's criticism. Dr. Robert Redfield, he's the director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said the guidelines for reopening schools will not be revised, but additional reference documents will be provided. So they're not backing down. So Trump is coming for them and they're saying, no, we're not going to change them. We'll give you specific guidelines, but we're not actually going to back down right now. Also, the jobs report just came out.
Yeah, I saw that right now. Well, to your story, President Trump already tweeted presidential harassment. So he already has put himself out there of how he feels.
As the victim, of course.
Of course. And then, yeah, like you said, unemployment claims are falling, but 1.3 million still applied for assistance last week. Listen, I know a lot of people that are still in the middle of losing their jobs, being furloughed, still needing unemployment. I mean, it's wild. This is a crazy time.
Scary time.
It is. Well, we'll continue this conversation. But first, if you're celebrating a birthday, happy birthday. You're in good company. Rocker Jack White from the White Stripes is 45. Actor, producer, director, and in our producer's words, the greatest human to ever live, Tom Hanks, is 64. And Top Gun actress Kelly McGillis is 62. Kelly was so beautiful. I mean, it is, but she was like hot in Top Gun.
Oh, yeah. Wait, is she the blonde?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember. I was forced unwillingly to watch that movie, and then I actually kind of liked it, and I thought she was hot.
You know, one of our guests, Jay Ellis, is in Top Gun Maverick, the sequel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think everything's gotten pushed back, the whole release schedule, but yeah.
All right. Well, give us a vibe of the day.
One day you will have everything you've ever wanted. Don't stop believing in yourself.
All right. Well, coming up, a search has been launched after the mayor of Seoul, Korea is reported missing. We have those details and our own theories coming up next.
Michaela Gordon, I often wonder, as we go through this global pandemic, what I would do if I were in a position of authority, or if I were, I don't know, I don't want to think about myself as the president, God forbid that, but if I were a governor or a mayor of a major city, how I would handle it. I'd like to think that I'd keep it together, that I'd be strong and resolute and hopeful, and I'd give, you know, those constituents who are looking up to me for guidance, I would give them some hope. That's in my mind how I would rule.
Yes.
But I don't know. And I asked this question because this story just popped up. I've thought this many times. And now the mayor of Seoul, South Korea, has gone missing. His phone has been turned off. And there is a massive, massive search party looking for him right now. This is Park Won-soon. He was just recently elected to his third term. Now, going back though, a little bit, he's known as a political activist and has been for many, many years. And so when you've got the word activist attached to your name, and then you become an elected official in a country that is on the southern peninsula of, you know, of the Korean peninsula, and you're constantly at sort of at odds with North Korea and Kim Jong-un. And we just saw Kim Jong-un blew up a building last week.
Listen,
because his wife was, in his mind, dishonored.
Okay, let me get crazy.
I know you have thoughts on this.
Well, here's why. Okay, and then we'll get back to like reality. But here's my, in my mind, when you sent me this story, I immediately went to Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix in my mind. Like, that's where I went. I got into character.
I know you love a good conspiracy theory, honey. So
I love being Nancy Drew and like figuring it out. So I was like, what makes sense here? And I thought about it. We talked about this last week. Not only did Kim Jong-un blow up the building for like photos that discredited his wife, but he also rode, there's footage of him like riding this white horse. And while he's riding the white horse, apparently it's very symbolic that he's sending a message that something is about to go down. So you're like, is it for us? Is it for his country? Who is it for? It just feels like they had his phone on, and then it just shuts off, no more contact. I think Kim Jong-un has something to do with it.
Well, this is interesting, though, because his daughter did call police yesterday afternoon and said that her father left a, quote, will-like message before leaving their home about 4 or 5 hours earlier in the day. Now, she didn't explain the contents of the message. She's probably, you know, out of fear or out of privacy. I don't know. But this is pretty wild to me. Didn't Vladimir Putin also ride a horse one time shirtless?
Yeah.
Is it a white horse? Maybe it's a beige. Maybe it's a beige horse.
Oh,
maybe something less big was about to happen that time.
Yeah, maybe. Well, listen, I feel like even though a note was left, that really doesn't mean anything. Because if you put it into context, that would be like how we talked about earlier, like Keisha Lance Bottoms just like going missing, like AWOL. You're just like, oh, taking care of all this stuff.
She just recently tested positive for coronavirus. I don't know. See, I don't
know.
But
to go missing, like, you know where she's at. She's not missing.
I like to think that that if I were in a position of power, that would rise to the occasion. But there have been days just hosting this radio show, especially early on in the pandemic, and I was like, nope, done. I'm out. Don't want to do this anymore. It's too much.
So you think he maybe just got tired?
What if he did? What if he either did take his life because he was exhausted or just decided to disappear? Because I've wanted to disappear. I get that. I understand that. And I understand that the conspiracy theory is always juicier and more exciting. But maybe he was just done. Maybe he was just tired of it. Maybe he realized that, you know, he was a longtime civic activist, human rights lawyer.
Like he's been doing this for so long. He knows what to prepare for mentally, physically, emotionally, to just up and leave because got a little difficult.
But listen, he was elected mayor 9 years ago. So before that, though, he was just an activist and a human rights lawyer. So to sort of step into situations and try to be a hero for a person here, a person there, maybe you're representing somebody in a case and you work on that case for 6 months or a year, and you can be a hero to that person, that might be rewarding. Then you're elected as a mayor of a city of 10 million people and a global pandemic hits. Isn't it possible that that activist, that part of him that felt so good saving individuals cannot save 10 million people and it became too overwhelming? I mean, that's not a far-fetched for me. I think that makes sense.
No, it's not far-fetched. It's not too far-fetched. But I also believe, especially being a human rights attorney, that somebody especially like him was just more prepared and to just leave the daughter and like leave this will. It just, to me, seems a little bit odd. And then the phone just to shut off.
Well, I know as an activist and a civil rights attorney, I could understand how that would make him a target for somebody like Kim Jong-un.
Absolutely.
And many
That's
others.
How
so,
I think.
You know, Kim Jong-un is probably listening to us right now, Michaela.
Oh, my God. Listen, I was just talking about Netflix Unsolved Mysteries. That's literally all I said. This is how it opened. Okay.
If
I'm not
one
even
of us
saying anything anymore.
Goes missing. We're going to, you know what that means?
Okay,
we're going to be famous. We're going to be famous.
We're getting the press that we deserve.
We're finally going to get the press. So,
you know what? You got it right this time. It's clear you're feeling better.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat. As we knew was going to happen this morning, the final day of the Supreme Court session, and a couple of rulings just came down regarding Donald Trump's tax returns. At first glance, it seems like great news in a 7-2 decision led by the liberal justices. But we're not really sure what to make of this ruling right now. So we're joined now by our political expert, Samuel Garrett Pate. Samuel, we don't know what's going on. Please tell us you have a better understanding than we do.
Sure. So the court issued two opinions related to the president's financial documents. One case was between the Manhattan District Attorney and the president, where the Manhattan District Attorney, in a criminal investigation, subpoenaed a number of the president's financial records, right? And in that case, the Chief Justice, joined by the liberal justices, wrote that indeed, the president does not have absolute immunity from state criminal proceedings and therefore does not have absolute immunity from, from this subpoena. And notably, the president's two conservative appointees, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, did not join the opinion, but they issued their own concurring opinion, concurring in the judgment. So it's essentially a 7-2 decision that no, the president is not above the law in this case. And that throughout history, presidents have been subject to subpoenas and criminal proceedings, and this should be no different. in the other case, right, which was a case related to whether or not Congress has the ability to subpoena the president's tax records, the same seven justices actually said, you know what, the lower courts here that found that Congress does have the ability to get the president's tax returns, they didn't actually adequately evaluate the issues of separations of powers. And so the implication here, right, what does it all mean? The Manhattan District Attorney is going to get the president's financial records, probably not for a few weeks until the judgment becomes final. And after that, it's a question of whether we see them, because those are grand jury documents which are protected under seal, right? So it would require a leak. And the court even went so far as to warn that anyone who chooses to leak those documents does so at their own peril, right? The second ruling means that Congress is not getting the president's tax returns for now. And the idea that that would be able to make its way all the way back through the courts before the November election seems unlikely. So definitely a big loss for the president in the first case, a win for now in the second.
So, okay. So let me just try to understand this then. So it comes down to if we are going to ever find out about these. So now the courts in New York State, they can get the records. Right now, Congress cannot. In order for us to ever find out what is in his tax returns, his financial disclosures, somebody would have to leak. Now is that kind of my understanding that?
If the question is ever, no, not necessarily, right? Because if they show that evidence to a grand jury and the grand jury decides to indict based on that evidence, there is a chance that ultimately in a trial that evidence could become public, right?
Got it.
In the short term, it would require someone related to that grand jury investigation, either in the Manhattan District Attorney's office or wherever, to leak those documents, which would be illegal.
Let's be hypothetical then. Let's say you do leak documents. And then it turns out that the information you're leaking is actually very pertinent and ends up being helpful and brings down the president. Let's just go to that scenario for just a moment. That person that leaks, are they still legally accountable, or all of a sudden are they praised now because they've done something good for the Republic?
You can be praised as doing something good for the Republic. It's still a crime. It is grand jury evidence. I mean, that is the court specifically went so far as to warn that anyone who violates the law to leak grand jury documents does so at their own peril.
I'm just going, because this is where people's minds are. I know where people are thinking, because we're looking at, you know, somebody who can violate the law and become the president of the United States. Right. So that's sort of where we are right now. So I'm just trying to play out some scenarios to see where this thing could go. Michaela?
I mean, sure, right? Like, sure, there is a chance that they get these documents, someone leaks it, that person's committed a crime. Maybe it takes down the president. Maybe Joe Biden wins and pardons that person, right? Like, that is all hypothetically possible. Whether or not someone would be willing to take that risk, I don't know, right? I mean, to date, no one at Mazars, the president's financial firm, has taken that risk, right? Like, they've had these documents the whole time. Obviously, the IRS has the president's tax returns. No one's been willing to take that risk to date, right? So could it happen? Sure. That person would be legally liable, and then it would be, you know, a question for the courts whether or not they're guilty, and potentially a question for the next president whether or not they should be pardoned.
Well, I guess I'm more silent on this because I think that I'm sort of just taking it in. I'm listening to what you say, because just breaking it down in kindergarten terms, like I like to do, I just don't understand how the president doesn't have to show his tax documents. Like, point blank, the end, it doesn't make sense to me. I have to pay my taxes every year. If I don't, you don't get a stimulus check. You don't get help from the government. You don't. I mean, it's just like, he doesn't have to.
So yes, you have to pay your taxes every year. So does the president. Whether or not he's done that, we don't know because we haven't seen his tax returns, right? But we also don't know whether or not you've properly paid your taxes because I haven't seen your tax returns either, Michaela, right? So it's like, yes,
yeah, but if I was you asked, both I have wouldn't to hide it. And if I hid it, I wouldn't be the president of the United States. Like, that's just what doesn't equate to me, how you're running the country and you're not having to show your tax. I'm not
sure. It certainly breaks precedent, right? All recent presidents have released their tax returns, but it's not required by law. And he has tested the bounds of that by saying, yes, I'll release them, and then not doing so, which is not shocking because the president lies all the time. But there is no, the one sort of avenue to getting an individual's tax returns, the one clear avenue to getting a president's tax returns is that Congress has the ability to request any individual's tax returns. What the court said in this case is, yes, that is true, but the president's not just any person, and that doesn't mean they can't get his tax returns. It just means that the courts need to weigh the fact that he is indeed the president of the United States, and that it is a special circumstance. It doesn't mean they can't meet the bar. It just means that the courts need to take that bar into account.
And it sounds like the courts are saying they were a little bit too broad in their approach too, that they maybe needed to be a little bit more specific, and maybe they could have had some more success. Is that true or no?
The bottom line is, in the first case, the court said, no, you are not special. You are not above the law. Throughout the entire history of the United States, dating back to a case in which John Marshall was not even a Supreme Court justice yet, ruled in a case saying that Aaron Burr, then the vice president, you may remember from Hamilton, then the vice president of the United States, could indeed subpoena the president, Thomas Jefferson, just to underscore how long ago this was, could indeed subpoena Thomas Jefferson for documents. The president said, well, that was federal court. This is state court. The Supreme Court said, doesn't matter. You have to turn it over.
Listen, the Supreme Court to me is like every person I dated in my 20s. Very wishy-washy, all over the place. I don't understand it. I'm totally confused. But thank you, Samuel Garrett Pate.
I know. We thank you, Samuel Garrett Pate. I guess, great. Thank you for that.
Great.
That's
or
how
not.
I feel. Sometimes after these rulings, I don't want to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm like, I'm a little confused because it feels a little black and white to me.
It's so just, Trump's still our president. Simple. Got it.
Oh, correct. Okay. Great. And Kanye's running for president. Okay. Got it. Thank you so much. Thank you, Samuel Garrett Pate. Coming up in What's Poppin', some devastating news has hit the media. Naya Rivera, you know and love her from Glee, is missing. We have more details as it comes up in What's Poppin'.
You are listening to The Morning Beat. Now, this next story in What's Poppin', Michaela Gordon, just has me asking the question once again, is the cast of Glee cursed? What do you have for us?
Okay, this is so sad. So this news broke late last night. Naya Rivera has been a very controversial character. She very much was open about her disdain for Lea Michele, but she was amazing on Glee. She's beautiful. And now there are reports that not only is she missing, she could possibly be dead after she took a rental boat yesterday out with her son, her four-year-old son, Josie. And all that was left was her four-year-old on the boat by himself, and she was nowhere to be found. Now, when they asked the little boy where his mom was, what had happened, he said that she went into the water, but she never came back. And so a search has been happening for her. Celebrities all around are really shook by this news, including her ex-fiance, Big Sean. Now, he also very famously dated Ariana Grande, but Naya and him were engaged, and he didn't come out on Twitter or Instagram, but he was liking posts in support of finding Naya and where she's at. And honestly, this is devastating. She's 33 years old. The baby's 4 years old. I feel like the news is really kind of shocking for everybody, and it sort of still doesn't make sense. Like, I feel like if it were me and my four-year-old and we rented a boat, how did we get to a place where now he's the only one on the boat? It's, again, not like conspiracies, but did she just drown? Did she hit her head and drown, or did she?
Or was there foul play involved? Yeah. Of course. I mean, anytime somebody of this age, at the height of their life, goes missing like this in such a suspicious way, you always wonder. it reminds me of the Natalie Wood story years ago on the boat. And we still keep hearing updates on that story all these years later. Heather Morris, who played Naya Rivera's on-screen wife, Brittany S. Pierce on Glee, she posted, we need all the prayers we can get to bring our Naya back home to us. We need your love and light. You know,
Demi Lovato said that too. I mean, big celebrities are coming out.
This show has been hit by so much sadness. For being called Glee and being the most cheerful show on air, a huge hit for many, many years. Obviously, Corey Monty took his life years ago. And then one of our other co-stars, I can't think of his name right now, played Puckerman. They found all the child pornography on his laptop. And then he took his life back in 2018.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh,
Mark Salling. That's right.
And then Lea Michele's been in hot water. I mean, people have really come out against her for being just vile and just not a nice person. That's plagued, so interesting.
Plagued by tragedy and scandal, this show has been ever since it went off the air. And it was my favorite show for many years.
It was a lot of people's favorite show. I feel like this is very sad. I'm not too optimistic that we're going to find her the way that we all want.
I don't see this turning out well, unless the only time I see a situation like this turning out okay to some degree is if they want to be missing, if they want to not be found. Do you know what I mean?
But also her four-year-old little boy, again, it goes back to even the story that we did with the mayor of Seoul. Like, I just find it very hard to believe people would just leave their children, especially 4 years old. Yeah. But of course, we'll continue keeping you updated. Obviously, we only want the best as well. And we hope that she's doing okay. Now, coming up in our next hour, one of the most masculine places in the world puts LGBTQ in their curriculum in schools. Could it be coming to the U.S.? We have all of those details and why it's important coming up.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat on this Thursday, July 9th. We've got some major, major breaking news coming to us from the Supreme Court. So let's just get right to it. Michaela Gordon, what's going on in news on the beat?
Okay, well, listen, it's a big, big ruling. Supreme Court essentially won't allow Congress to get Trump tax and financial records for now, but we're going to continue talking about that. We had a great conversation with Samuel Garrett Pate, who really broke it down in regards to the ruling returning to the case to lower the courts. And you can always go to wearechannelq.com and listen to our podcast, because what he said was really insightful. But that's it. That's one of the last big rulings.
Yeah, it's the last big ruling of the session. There were two of them that came down today. 7-2 decisions, all the liberal judges voting together. And Gorsuch and Kavanaugh both voting with the liberal judges. Actually, interestingly enough, they're both appointed by Donald Trump. It's sort of a mixed bag. It's saying for now, Congress cannot get those records. But New York, the state of New York, can. Will they happen? Will they be released to us before the election? Probably not. But it's sort of a mixed bag.
Yeah. All right. Well, in other news, at least 24 states have hit pause on reopening plans as U.S. coronavirus cases rocket past 3 million. To add to the tension, distrust between President Trump and his top health officials has boiled to the surface. The president has not attended a meeting of his coronavirus task force in months, and the group has started holding sessions outside the White House. Now, things are similarly grim elsewhere. The UK just unveiled another $37.6 billion coronavirus stimulus package as leaders try to lift Britain out of its worst economic slump in centuries. In Hong Kong, authorities are warning of potential exponential growth in new COVID-19 cases after a surge in local transmissions. It is a big blow to a city initially hailed for its quick and effective pandemic response. Also, the numbers did just come out earlier this morning. We talked about it, but unemployment claims are falling, but 1.3 million still applied for assistance last week. So things are, we're waiting for the money. I think many Americans are.
Yeah, and a second round of stimulus checks. The Republican Party sort of like pushed pause on that right now. They're debating it. It's not really moving anywhere.
Yeah.
Listen, $1,200 a person over a global pandemic that's been going on for 5 months now. While corporations are getting millions and millions of dollars is wild to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right. Well, Brazil's coronavirus crisis is spiraling into allegations of corruption and separately a deepening distrust of President Bolsonaro. A wave of probes into suspected misuse of federal relief funds has touched officials across the country, including governors and mayors. Nearly 1,500 federal criminal judicial proceedings have also been opened into coronavirus-related cases, including investigations into misuse of public funds, fraud, overpricing, and money laundering. Meanwhile, Bolsonaro has vetoed several legal attempts to protect indigenous communities against the virus, even as he recently announced he's contracted COVID-19 himself. In fact, the Brazilian Press Association has said it will sue Bolsonaro over possibly exposing members of the media after he took off his mask during a news conference announcing his positive test. But do you imagine?
Who takes off a mask
saying they're announce positive?
They're positive. That's crazy. Nuts. He's trying to out Trump Trump.
He is, and he might be doing it, which is very hard to do. Wow. Okay, well, if you're celebrating a birthday, happy birthday. You're in good company. You're celebrating with singer Courtney Love. She's 56. Top Gun actress Kelly McGillis is 62. And Shark Tank star Mr. Wonderful Kevin O'Leary is 66.
You now, know, one of my best friends. Oh, no, I'm going to give you a vibe. One of my best friends, though, speaking of Shark Tank, cast that show.
So, oh, my God, that's hey, cool.
I'm just saying, if we ever come up with a really dope idea, I know people.
Listen, I can't wait. I want to talk about it.
We're not creative. You're right. I heard it in your voice. here's your vibe of the day. One day you will have everything you've ever wanted. Don't stop believing in yourself.
I love that. It's beautiful.
No, you do.
All right, you guys.
You always love the really happy vibes.
That I do. I need positivity right now in this chaotic time. All right, you guys. Same. Well, coming up this hour, Kanye West is running for president. However, will his mental health issues get in the way based off a four-hour interview he just gave? We have those stories coming up for you this hour.
All right, Michaela Gordon, I'm going to drop my voice real quick and get really masculine because that's what this story requires. And I've got to ask you a question.
Oh, you sound so masculine by simply dropping your voice.
You're welcome. Do you know who William Wallace is?
Not a clue, baby.
All right. That was that was Mel Gibson's character in Braveheart. Arguably one of the most masculine characters in the history of cinema, coming out of what could be called one of the most masculine nations on the planet, Scotland. However, toxic masculinity, not an issue in Scotland, apparently, because Scotland is set to become the first country in the entire world to introduce LGBTQ+ inclusive lessons to their school curriculum. Now, in 2021, next year, all public schools will receive lessons in issues faced by the community, such as same-sex marriage, same-sex parenting, homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, and the HIV and AIDS epidemic. This is fantastic news, but why Scotland? Like, that's what I want to know. Why Scotland? Why not America? What's going on?
Well, I feel like as we're talking about, and I know it was in the article about like the country being masculine and like Scotland and like Braveheart and like, yes, actually, I think that they would just be more progressive and not even gender anything. I mean, if you're really putting in curriculum, LGBTQ curriculum, that's huge. That's something that America has refused to do. If you scroll down the comments from this article, people are livid. One guy said he would behead a teacher if he taught their child any LGBTQ curriculum.
Another person said, awful, effing burn it all down. And then somebody said, I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, they're upset. But I think that Scotland is already considered one of the most progressive countries in Europe. That was in a statement, and they said that they're delighted to announce that they'll be doing LGBTQ curriculum. And I'll say, you know, you think about being young, and if you were to see yourself portrayed in books and portrayed it as being normal instead of sick.
Girl, I would have saved thousands of dollars in therapy. I wouldn't have
thousands.
To, like, I throw away every Wednesday because I get anxious before therapy and I'm anxious after it. So my Wednesdays are usually shot because of therapy.
Yeah.
I will also say we had a fantastic conversation that you're going to hear in just a little bit with Carmen Carrera. And she talked about this documentary called Disclosure on Netflix. So after we spoke with her yesterday, we're going to air that, like I said, in our final hour today. But after we spoke with her, I went and I watched the 2-hour documentary. And it talks about exactly that. This is focusing on the trans community and representation and how they've been presented in film and television since the beginning of time. Literally to the very first film in black and white silent films, how the trans community was portrayed. Yeah. And these roots go deep. And I remember listening to, you know, Carmen Carrera was on the documentary with Laverne Cox. They did an interview with Katie Couric, and they just talked about how important it is to see yourself, to see what it is to be who you are. So as a young gay person, I can only imagine going to elementary school. Granted, I went to Immaculate Conception Elementary School, so I don't know if a Catholic school is going to teach this stuff.
Yeah. But
I can imagine what it would have been like to find out at a young age that, hey, you might be different, but that doesn't mean you're not exactly who you're supposed to be. You might be different from most people that you see in your daily life, but you're not alone. You're not the only one.
I think this is cool because amid protests and harmful debates around the topic of LGBTQ inclusive education in UK schools, Stonewall had found that 60% of British people believe it's right and important to teach kids about diverse families, including those with same-sex parents. And the support is even higher among young people as this figure increases to 68% for Brits aged 16 to 24. And let me tell you something. I did go to Catholic school, and I went to Catholic school with a lesbian mother who brought her lesbian girlfriend around, and I was bullied. They were not, even the parents, I think I got it worse than the kids because we were little. The kids didn't really understand. And had they just normalized even just same-sex parents, mm-hmm. it would have been so different. But it does go to show with the statistics going up with people between 16 and 24, we are moving, I think, in a generation where it's getting more and more accepted, which is what we need.
Listen, girl, I try my best not to judge anyone. I try to keep an open heart to everyone. I have trans friends, and I still found myself watching this documentary yesterday and learning new things that challenge the way that I view content and the way that I have discussions. And I reached out to Char Jocel, who actually is one who initially told me about this, but then Carmen Carrera was on the documentary. But Char Jocel told me to watch it, and I reached out and I said, thank you, because as a cis white, you know, gay man, I thought my struggle was so grand, and how I've really fought through so much homophobia. And then I see the trans struggle, and I can't even imagine. So representation matters. Learning about yourselves in school books is super important. And if God willing, we ever get to that point here in the United States, we don't get those sort of responses like these people in the comment section on this story online.
I agree. All right, you guys. Well, coming up, Kanye West is apparently in the middle of a serious bipolar episode as a 4-hour interview just came out. Some of the things he said were shocking, and we'll have those details coming up next.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat. Now, if you're as long as you're not driving right now, I want you to go ahead and follow along with this little experiment we're going to do. How about we all just close our eyes again, if you're not driving, close your eyes for just a moment and imagine a debate stage with Donald Trump on one end, Joe Biden on the other, and Kanye West in the middle. Let's just hypothetically say he makes it to the debate stage. I want you to picture what that debate stage looks and sounds like. And I want you just to think of these questions and think of these responses. Because Kanye West is running for president, baby, and he is, in his mind, very, very serious about this.
Yeah.
However, Kim has not really said anything yet, and she has made it very clear in the past that she and the Kardashians, their views politically differ very much so from Kanye West. And to be fair, Kanye West's views on politics tend to differ from Kanye West month to month, year to year. So I'm not sure how serious to take this. You know, Samuel Garrett Pate was on our show, our political expert, and he said, look, Kanye hasn't even filed the proper filings yet. So who knows how serious he is? He's missed the deadline in many, many states to even get on the ballot in November. But this is actually really concerning to me.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Well, according to the Daily Mail, sources are saying that Kanye is in the middle of a serious bipolar episode and that his family are very concerned for him following this controversial Forbes interview and the decision to run for president. Now, he sat down recently with Forbes, actually on Wednesday, and did a four-hour interview. 4 hours where he went on and on. He said that Planned Parenthood is an organization run by white supremacists that do the devil's work. He also talked about running for president, and one of his spiritual leaders is going to be his running mate. And their concern, allegedly, is that he has one of these bipolar breaks about once a year, and that they think that he is in the middle of one again right now.
So here's, let's start with this. I suffer from mental health, so I absolutely understand. And I know that Same. You do as well. Yep. We've been very open about that. And I have family members who have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, including my mother. So those episodes do become very, very manic. It is very understandable. And I also understand the desire to not want to medicate yourself. I know that people have felt like not only does it stifle their creativity, it makes them feel different. As with a lot of medication when it comes to anxiety, depression, I felt that way for a long time when I didn't want to take my depression medication. And then I did because I knew that that was right for me. So having said all of that, I think the dangerous part that we are walking into, a lot of the things he's saying now, you know, I love conspiracy theories and I love to like talk with you about them. And even you get freaked out. You're like, yeah, stop. And then we're like, yeah, I'm going to take it seriously. We don't take it seriously. It's up for conversation. A lot of the things he's saying are strong conspiracy theories that he's spewing that could either A, if they were true, really get him in trouble, or two, really are coming from a manic bipolar place. And I just don't see, he's not being judged because he has mental health issues to become president. He's being judged because he's not treating his mental health.
Well, he thinks though that he talked to David Letterman about this in an interview a while back. He says he feels discriminated against because of his mental health issues. He goes on to say, I can just tell you what I'm feeling at the time. I feel a heightened connection with the universe when I'm ramping up. He equates it to being like a sprained ankle. He says his brain is actually sprained. And when somebody sprains their ankle, you're not going to push on him more. But when your brain gets to a point of spraining, people do everything to make it worse. They kind of like pile on and call you things like crazy or unhinged. So it is a very real concern. Listen, he does tout some pretty wild conspiracy theories. And I am also of the mind that there is truth to many conspiracy theories, some truth. That doesn't mean I buy into them completely. That right. doesn't mean I connect all the dots. I'm all in. But I believe there's a lot of stuff going on in the world that we don't know about, that we will never know about,
but
that
also,
I don't
that's
want to know
dangerous,
about.
Babe. Yes. Like you can't, if for, and let's say now for fun, let's say he has this information. He's met many times with Trump. Maybe they've shared intimate conversations about what's going on. Maybe not. You can't just go out and start to having all of this quote unquote crazy talk because
he thinks he's woke now and he's trying to share what he's learned from, you know, who knows, the Illuminati or QAnon,
or
like whoever
it is. Yeah. Like either way, you're either making yourself,
but also
look like you're in a deep manic or you're saying things that could get you killed. I mean, either way,
I'll play angel's advocate then.
Okay.
So let's say, and this
angel's
is,
advocate. I like that.
I'm not down with the devil. Let's just say this. Let's just say, what if all these people who believe in these deep state conspiracies and all these things say, well, he can't go out and share all that because that's dangerous. Like, but aren't you sort of protecting these wild ideas that are unfounded sometimes based in some factual evidence, whatever. Isn't it convenient, though, to be like, well, you can't go out and share it or you're going to be in danger. So everybody holds that information in forever. Holds on to their conspiracy theories, then nothing ever happens with them? Nothing's ever done?
First of all, 100%, and I agree with you. And maybe that's why they're trying to hush him. Maybe he's saying things that people aren't supposed to know, and he's playing angel's advocate and saying, no, I'm going to share these messages that I know for the betterment of humanity. However, it is coming off a little manic right now. We do hope that he gets whatever he needs to sort of be able to not
I'll,
be
I'll
so
be curious. Yeah, I'll be
anxiety.
Curious to see if any of the Kardashians come out and support him. Publicly.
Oh, I'm sure Kim will. All right, you guys. Well, listen, coming up, they have cast the character of Batwoman. We are so excited to announce who it is. Progress is happening, particularly for our Black LGBTQ community. And we'll share those details coming up next in What's Poppin'.
Listen, girl, I know that you were heartbroken, as was I, when Ruby Rose decided to step away from Batwoman. She was iconic. She was the first member of the LGBTQ community to play Batwoman. It was a big deal. And we were wondering, will the show continue? Will they backslide? Are they going to cast a cis straight woman to play this role? We have an update. What do you have for us and what's popping?
Okay, well, you're absolutely right. And you know that I love Ruby Rose and I think she's super hot. So I was like, she's got to go, then I'm never watching again. However, I got a new crush, baby. By actress Javicia Leslie has been cast as the first Black Batwoman, which has just pleased. She's beautiful.
She's stunning.
She's so hot. And I love that they went this route. You know, I think that... lesbians have a lot of visibility. I think that actually bisexual women do not have a lot of visibility. People have always kind of poo-pooed on you know, the B of the LGBTQ, like they're wishy-washy or they don't know what they want. So to not only make it this beautiful Black woman, but she's also bisexual, I think is absolutely incredible. And she said, I am extremely proud to be the first Black actress to play the iconic role of Batwoman on television. And as a bisexual woman, I'm honored to join this groundbreaking show, which has been such a trailblazer for the LGBTQ plus community. And she's just looking, she's really looking gorgeous. Even Ruby Rose, put out a statement on her Instagram congratulating her, telling her that she's going to enjoy it so much, and the cast and the crew, and Ruby wouldn't want anybody but Javicia to take over her role. So I think it's great. Maybe this is a lesson that we're going to have a lot more diversity starting now.
Yeah, fans might recognize her as Ali Finer from God Friended Me on CBS. She's making a jump, though. She is the star in this show. She's going to be leading this cast, which is a super big, big deal as an actor. Not many people have an opportunity to do that ever in their lives. You know, speaking of sort of like biphobia, that I have to be honest, that was me for a long time. I didn't understand it. I remember just maybe 5 or 6 years ago having a conversation with a friend of mine who is bisexual, and we'd been drinking. It was at a holiday party, I believe. And I was going on. I'm like, come on. Like, really? Like you're gay. Like, wait, no, I know guys you've dated. Like, you're gay. He's like, no, I like women too. And I'm like, come on. And in my mind, I could somehow understand how women could be bisexual. But at the time, I didn't really understand how men could be bisexual. I didn't think it was a real thing. I thought
that's a huge thing, men particularly.
Yeah, I didn't understand, because like the act of having sex with another man as a man is so invasive, you know, sexually speaking, that in my mind, I'm like, well, if you can do that, I don't understand why you'd then want to go do the opposite thing with a woman. Whereas bisexual women, I could always understand. That made sense to me for some reason. You know, I don't know why.
No,
go ahead.
Thank you for bringing it up, because I think that this is a conversation that many people have, and it's our job to also have it. You know, I would definitely say that I am bisexual, as opposed to just straight labeling myself as a lesbian, because I have been with men and I loved them. I enjoyed them, but it's always opened a door to be sort of disrespected when I am with women, thinking that we can, when Miley Cyrus made that comment of like, I just needed the good D. Like, that's oftentimes how bisexual women are looked at. And I do prefer women over men. So I love that that we are actually having this conversation. And I think we should continue it maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it goes back to education too and representation. Had I seen bisexual characters or something as a child, I might have understood it. Because listen, I'm 110% gay as the day is long. Like, there's not one ounce of me that's ever been interested in a woman sexually. However, my best friends in the world are all women. We can talk. That's all we're doing. But yeah, so I think this is really fantastic. And I'm glad that they bring this up. You know, bi representation does matter.
It does. All right, you guys. Well, coming up in our final hour, trans representation matters. And we have one of the most beautiful trans female activists, Carmen Carrera, joining us to talk about Jasmine, a new chat that you're able to talk with her and other celebrities that you like one-on-one, and also her involvement with Love Loud. We'll have that interview coming up next.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat on this Thursday, July 9th. In our final hour, we're joined by Carmen Carrera. You know her, you love her. She's got a lot of great things going on that she's going to share with us. And she has some thoughts on the Halle Berry dust-up we talked about a few days ago, taking the role to play a transgendered man in a film and then retreating, retracting, and getting some backlash on social media. Carmen has a very unique perspective, and we're going to share that with you this hour. So stick around for that conversation. Also, Supreme Court just dropped a couple blockbuster rulings. I'll let Michaela tell you more about those in News on the Beat. Take it away.
Got it, babe. Well, there's a lot going on in a history-making decision. The Supreme Court ruled President Donald Trump cannot block a subpoena for his financial records sought by a New York prosecutor, ruling he is not immune from criminal investigation. Now, the decision is a major legal defeat for President Trump, although it is highly unlikely the public will see the president's tax returns or financial records before Election Day. We had a really great conversation with Samuel Garrett Pate, really breaking down what this all means, and will we see it, in his opinion. So if you missed that conversation, you can head on over to wearechannelq.com and listen on our podcast, because he'll be joining us tomorrow too. We have some really big information that we'll be sharing with you guys with him, so you'll want to tune in for that tomorrow as well. Now, in other news, at least 24 states have hit pause on reopening plans as U.S. coronavirus cases rocket past 3 million. That adds to the tension. Distrust between President Trump and his top health officials has boiled to the surface. The president has not attended a meeting of his coronavirus task force in months, and the group has started holding sessions outside the White House. Things are similarly grim elsewhere. The UK just unveiled another $37.6 billion coronavirus stimulus package as leaders try to lift Britain out of its worst economic slump in centuries. In Hong Kong, authorities are warning of potential exponential growth in new COVID-19 cases after a surge in local transmissions. It's a big blow to a city initially hailed for its quick and effective pandemic response. I mean, it is.
And this is Thursday. This is Thursday, Michaela Gordon.
The amount of new, it's so funny. I'll share with our listeners, but
funny, like not ha ha funny. Like, no, I'm holding like on by a
funny
thread.
Life. Am I right? We were trying to find some stories that we wanted to talk about. And I don't know if like our listeners feel this way, but you're just inundated with just news. I mean, grown up news, adulting news.
Mm-hmm.
Have I ever felt like this, AJ? No.
All day. Who is this girl? I don't know who you are.
I'm an adult, apparently. That's what I do now. News.
We're going to lighten things up this hour with Carmen Carrera, though. So that's something great to look forward to.
We really are. It's a great conversation that we had. But first, if you're celebrating a birthday, let's keep it light. Happy, happy birthday. You're in great company. You're celebrating with Top Gun actress Kelly McGillis. She's 62. Actor, producer, and director Tom Hanks is 64. Fred Savage, a.k.a. Kevin Arnold from The Wonder Years, turns 44. And Shark Tank star Mr. Wonderful Kevin O'Leary is 66. Wow, it's funny that Kevin's a Cancer. Maybe that's why, like, he's a really sensitive guy.
He is, but also, I was watching an old episode of Shark Tank the other day with my partner, Emil, and the sharks were so mean in the early years.
Like, he was the meanest.
So mean. I've interviewed him a couple, like, I've interviewed him once, maybe, years ago in Las Vegas at the Billboard Music Awards, and he was very friendly, but he was witty. But they were a lot meaner in the early seasons than they are now.
Damon was too. He was wild. He's a little bit nicer now.
That stuff doesn't fly anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No more Simon Cowells. The world's like, we're over it.
Nope.
Okay. Give us a vibe of the day.
One day you will have everything you've ever wanted. Don't stop believing in yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right. Well, one woman who has never stopped believing in herself is our next guest, Carmen Carrera. She's joining us to talk about her work with Love Loud and a new site that you can have a personal interaction with her and other celebrities, including Pamela Anderson, which, you know, I'm already excited about. We'll have that for you coming up next.
You're listening to The Morning Beat. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. We're joined now by a beautiful young lady, Carmen Carrera. This is the first time we've actually met, so it's so nice to meet you. I just became familiar with you. A good friend of ours, Shar Jussel, was on the show recently. We were talking about this Halle Berry story, which we're going to ask you about in a little bit. But she recommended I watch Disclosure on Netflix. And you were featured on there, the interview you did with Katie Couric. And then you were on there, Laverne Cox came out, and sort of she asked her the same question she asked you. And she sort of like came in like a proud mama and kind of like stood by you in response to a question that was kind of inappropriate That was a few years ago. How have you changed since then? And how would you respond differently now, do you think?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think that honestly, that moment is what changed the narrative around interviewers feeling comfortable to like ask trans people about their genitalia. Mm. You know, so I'm kind of, that moment is like, at the time, I didn't realize how significant that would have become. And I think it was because it was just sort of like magic, honestly. Like, I didn't even know that Laverne was going to be on that day. I think I had only met her like once or twice in passing. And like, it was just like such a perfect combo. I didn't expect that. That came out of left field. I was sort of like souped up to see like, oh my gosh, you know, like I'm on Katie Couric. Like, wow, like I'm going to talk about like really awesome things. And yeah, I just honestly, like that changed the game completely. You know, it was so special. It was so special. And that documentary, watching the history of like just the narrative, the movement, the just the topic, the conversation, like it just really opened up my eyes and it makes me feel more like proud, you know, to like keep pushing and keep going. And, you know, where I am now is like in a totally different space. Like that would definitely not fly these days.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what I was curious. I was curious if you've grown into your voice a bit more, it seems.
Yeah. Like I'm more, a little bit more relaxed. Cause you know, it's like, look, when I got that opportunity, it was new. And like, I don't think you can really like understand what that experience really feels like until you experience it. And you can't prepare yourself, you know? Yeah. So now I'm a bit more like mature. I'm more like relaxed. I'm like, you know what? I got this. Whereas before I was like, oh my God, Katie Couric. Like, oh my God. Like every, you know, like I saw everything through rose colored goggles, you know, like everything was like, so like, wow. You know, now I'm
well,
just like,
it's okay. So funny because I met you years ago from Drag Race. I feel like so many of your fans have been on this full journey with you. I told you, I can't believe your stepmom to a 16-year-old. Like we all kind of know your life. Yeah. And I think that you've brought so much visibility and positive visibility to so many spectrums of the LGBTQ community. I want to ask you, what did you think about Halle Berry talking about and misgendering the character and then eventually stepping down due to pressure?
Well, I think honestly, that's really, first of all, when you have an opportunity to tell a story, you want to make sure as an actor or as anyone, a storyteller, you want to make sure that you are staying true to the people, to the group of people who you are serving in a sense. So I honestly think that's like really big of her to like say, you know what, like this is something that I feel like deserves the right, you know, trans actor, not just like any actor to come and like play a trans role. And I think it sends a message out there to Hollywood, to, you know, any other writer or producer, you know, to really kind of give us that validation, because we've been saying this for a long time. Like we've been asking for this. We've been saying, hey, we have talent. Hey, we can tell these stories, you know, and it does kind of feel like we're like such a small fish in this huge ocean of like these big, you know, big time A-list actors, you know, who have the access, they have the name. And, you know, I think it was really big of her and I applaud her. Like, you know, go Halle Berry. Like that's really huge, you know.
Well, I think with any movement, it always comes down to representation, right? Visibility and representation, they really do make the difference, because I do believe it's so hard to judge anyone once you know them. And you're representing yourself very well on this new platform, Jasmine. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes. So, okay. Jasmine's really cool because with Jasmine, I can connect to people like one-on-one. Whereas like Instagram and, you know, Facebook and Twitter, it's kind of just like what you put out. It's more of like what you are, you know, trying to contrive in a sense. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to share this part of my life. I'm going to share that part of my life. And I feel like I've always wanted to be like a service to people. You know what I'm saying? Like I want everything that I'm learning every step of the way is new for me. And I sort of have created a nuance with my experience. And I want to bring peace of mind and healing to anyone that's going through the trans experience, or just feeling different and wanting to come into themselves. And so Jasmine gives me that opportunity where I can book like a one-on-one with someone and we can just sit there like a FaceTime and talk about like whatever is going through their mind or whatever they're experiencing or what they need help with or clarity with. And that really makes me feel like a deeper sense of purpose, you know, maybe because I'm a mom, like maybe, I don't know what it is, but it's like, a lot of the fears that I found in the LGBT community going through my process and my journey, I've always wanted to dispel, you know, I've always wanted to bring love and like sort of remind people that yes, we have a lot of adversity and yes, there's a lot of naysayers and there's a lot of judgment, but we also have access to love and we have to create it. And how can we do that? Collectively and work together. So it's like when I got this opportunity to work with Jasmine, I was so excited because I'm like, dude, like I can really put my experience to work. And so, and it's international. So now I'm talking and meeting with people from all walks of life, different cultures, you know, and really bring some of like my vibrancy, you know, to the far reaches of the world. Like, what?
Carmen, you're so wonderful. We want to continue the conversation specifically about the time you sat down with Mitt Romney and your involvement with a global company with Pam Anderson. We'll have more coming up next.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat. We're joined again by Carmen Carrera. I know Michaela Gordon, you've got so much more you want to talk about.
Well, this is something very fierce too, because I love that people can connect with you, including like youth, it doesn't matter. But the brand's creative director is Pamela Anderson, which I think is so fierce. And the two of you, have you been able to meet and work together? And is it sort of like a girl power thing? Because she was such a sex symbol for so long to so many, but she was also kind of like slut shamed. Very disrespectfully. And to see now in 2020, it's a different game and you're literally running the world.
Yeah. I mean, also too, just like being objectified, you know, yeah. and how people disconnect you from your humanity. You know, I bet Pamela has some amazing stories, you know, just female empowerment, like how she's able to harness her power, you know? And like, I think that's pretty badass, you know?
Yeah.
She's definitely an icon, a beauty icon, sex icon. She's just someone that I think provides something different than what you'd expect from Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the name Pamela Anderson, like so much more. She's so cool.
It sounds like that's what Jasmine offers for you. Like fans can get something different from you. They can check it out at Jasmine, JASMIN.com. Carmen, yes. You're fantastic. You're wonderful.
Carmen, thank you. I want you to know I literally followed you for so long and you're just so warm and your essence is so kind and you're really welcome anytime on the show. But thank you for all the work. You've been working for a long time, for a lot of years. I know that you work very closely with Love Loud and you've sat down with Mitt Romney and different politicians to talk about the very important things that we need for our community, particularly in conversion therapy and making sure that's banned. So
the bills got passed that we lobbied. We went to lobby day and we sat there and I looked at the senators in the eye and I'm like, hey,
come on,
you sign this, please. This is what we, you know, like that's, you know, you walk away with such a feeling of accomplishment because I kind of feel like you can get lost sometimes in the shuffle of things. Like when, you know, like people want access to you and whatever it is. And like, sometimes you get lost in that, you know? And like by doing things like this, like I said, like it gives me a deeper sense of purpose because ultimately, like I want to create positive change. And I think that we all deserve it. You know, all oppressed people. So it was pretty cool. It was pretty awesome. And I'm actually working on with Jasmine. I'm working on a project where I want to take their the new LGBT caucus that was just formed, I don't know, a couple months ago on Capitol Hill. It's a group of like small group of LGBT people that came together and was like, hey, all right, we need to like really, you know, get our stuff together and create change. And I want to do like a profile of them on my Jasmine. So like, you know, giving people access to the information, the names and the faces of the people who are making change for us. And they can put the trust in there. Cause I kind of feel like when it comes to activism, it's like folks kind of feel lost. Like, how can I help? How can I be of service? Or how can I, even if it's signing a petition or if it's going to a protest. And so I want to connect those dots for people. So I'm working, yeah, with Jasmine. So I can bring like a camera crew and like, we can sit down and we can show people, what's happening out there.
As someone who has fought for so many years for, you know, for so many different sort of cross sections of the LGBTQ plus community, and you see the Black Lives Matter protests becoming what's being called the biggest civil rights movement in the history of the planet right now, by some accounts. What sort of similarities do you see, and where do you see these movements kind of coming together and moving forward as one?
Well, my hope right now, what I'm seeing is there's a lot of people of color that are stepping in and, you know, being inclusive to Black trans people, you know, and saying, hey guys, like, we've got to come together, because look, I have light skin, you know, I, as much as I would love to be a voice to the Black Lives Matter movement, the best thing that I can do is share the information, right? Because I don't think I've ever experienced the level of oppression that someone of color or a trans woman of color has dealt with. You know, I have dealt with a lot in my life, but I feel like for me, what we have to do in order to work together is be able to identify the holes and like what's missing within, like, I guess the like sub layers of the activism, you know, so that we can have a better connection and we can work together, you know, because that's definitely what I am totally about. So I kind of see it like we've got to be present and we have to be available. But at the same time, we have to be like willing to step up and like for instance, I was on my social media and I was, you know, kind of not pleading or whatever, but like I was asking people like, hey, can you like, even if you are not a person of color, like just join the fight and be there and show up. And, you know, because I feel like there is a lot of, there's like a stigma with like trans women and stuff. And I feel like if we just don't ask questions and just support, you know, and just show up for other people, that karma will come back to us, you know, and people can see that we do care. We're not like here to deceive people or whatever people may think of us, or, you know, we're actually in the same boat and we're very similar, you know, in the oppression that we experience. And it's not to say that anyone's pain is, you know, greater than anyone else's, but if we do come together and work together, I think it's going to be better for the whole, you know, and we all can use some allies in our lives, you know, and diversity is amazing. It's key. You know, I get bored of myself. Like, I want to meet someone who's different. That's why I love Jasmine, because I can meet people from like all walks of life and culturally too. Like, I want to feel cultured. I want to feel connected to other people and music and food. And I love human beings. I love expression. I love, you know, all of those things.
And, well, we love you, Carmen. Yeah, we understand why they signed those bills. You're very persuasive. And you're very
I know. I'm like, I just love you, girl. Well, you're also persuading us to go to jasmine.com. We'll also have that information on our website. You know, yeah. Pride may be over, but we celebrate Pride. Pride 365. Carmen, you are a Pride icon for all the work that you've done and for living your truth. You're always welcome on our show. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, Michaela. I appreciate you. And AJ, yeah, I'm going to come back. We're going to talk. I have a lot of little things cooking right now.
Well, you're always welcome here with our Channel Q family. Now, coming up for our final segment, Life Goes On. Wine fairies have been anonymously gifting booze and treats to neighbors. Find out those details and why it brings a smile to our face coming up next.
You know what, Michaela Gordon, life does go on, so we thought we'd end our show, as we always do, with three inspirational stories to send our listeners off into the day with a little bit of love and light in their hearts. This first one comes to us from Bowie, Maryland. I'd like to introduce you to a man named Rehan Staten. He's a 24-year-old. He has been accepted to Harvard Law School, and he says it's all thanks to the support he received in his job as a garbage collector. Now, he would get up at 4 a.m., every day to work as a garbage collector in his small town. And he said he has some colleagues that were ex-convicts. The company's owner's son saw his potential, though, and made sure that he stayed accountable for his dreams to go to law school at Harvard. This video is so fantastic. Now, he's sitting down with a couple family members and waiting for this email to come through Harvard to let him know if he's been accepted into grad school. He's nervous. He doesn't want to open it up. His family member's like, listen, bro. He's like, you're doing this for the entire family. On the wall behind them, he's created a whole vision board where he sticks these things up on the wall to like keep him focused. He opens up the email. They go crazy. He's heading off to law school. Listen, his mom left the family when he was 8 years old, moved out of the country. He said up to that point, he lived a solidly middle-class upbringing. But after his mother left, his father really struggled to support him and his brother, Reggie, who's 27 years old. So he's taken on multiple jobs. His dad has. So has this young man, working at 4 a.m. in trash collection to get through college and then to get into Harvard. That's wild. I haven't heard a story this wild since Legally Blonde.
Listen, I am the Elle Woods of our generation.
You sure are. I want to say, though, his first year at Bowie State, where he went to undergrad, he got a 4.0 GPA. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me share another very sweet story for you. I'm sorry. This is like real time. So I'm just going to let you know. The street sweepers are cleaning and Lisa just had to run out to her car to move her car. That's currently life goes on. And so does street sweeper cleaning. Okay. So get a look into my glamorous life. Huh?
Street so sweeping. Does our show.
Okay. Well, listen, this story is really cute. So Wine Fairies is a thing. It's a group of 78,000 people. They dress up like fairies and then they ding dong ditch and leave behind wine and treats for somebody who needs a smile.
What?
Okay. Make call me a sommelier.
Hmm? Sommelier.
Yeah. You know what I said?
That.
Yep. That's hand in hand, baby. I would love to be a part of this group. I think it's so sweet. Everyone needs a little wine right now.
You're going to open up your front door and look out on your front step every hour of the day now when you're
I'm
sad.
Like
I know
sort
you.
Of waiting for you to do it. Like, wait, okay, are you my wine fairy?
Okay, well, so now I need to start doing this for you. Yes. I'll do it. I'll bring you wine.
I love it. Just have it with me in my front yard.
Well, you brought me White Claw recently. I think I brought you White Claw in return. Well, we're on a roll.
Yeah, we're on a roll. Okay, give us one last story.
All right, Tennessee rescue dog alerts owner to house fire next door. And by doing so, this dog saved an entire family because they were sleeping. So this is really fantastic. It was the 4th of July. He became a little hero, this guy did. Family had no idea what was going on. Can you even imagine? His name is Rue. He's a 3-year-old Belgian Malinois. Malinois? I don't know what kind of dog that is. He looks kind of almost like a cousin to a German Shepherd. He was apparently barking frantically, unusually, at the front door of owner Jeff LaCate's home in Franklin, Tennessee. It's about 20 miles or so south of Nashville late Saturday night. And the fire department came out. This entire family was saved because this little dog just had a feeling something was going
That's so sweet.
And saved them.
So I love it.
Listen, when your dog's barking, unless it's just annoying and it's early in the morning, like sometimes Rocco does because he's cute and wants to let us know he's alive, pay attention. Dogs know what's up.
I love that. Well, okay. These are really great stories and life does go on. I have to go outside and now move my car, but we have a great show for you tomorrow. We're heading into the weekend. Wear your masks, stay safe.
Also,
and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Also, Michaela, this is a big deal. Yeah. We're back in studio tomorrow.
Woo! No street sweeping then. Am I right? We're back to being professionals.
Yes.
We'll see you. Thank you for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.